Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of In the Eyes of Truth, and back with us is Larry Johnson, Sonar 21.
Hey there.
Huh?
I said, hey there, I'm glad to be back.
And if you don't know who Larry is, then what are you still doing on the show? Go climb out from under the rock you're under. You've been under for years. Larry, welcome back.
Hey there. Something feels off. Same news, same noise. Different day.
Maybe you're just in the wrong place, mate.
Wait, what?
Maybe you've been here before.
I was what? I am a Cossack.
Wait, I remember this. I was a merchant.
Okay, this is getting weird. I was a Russian musician.
Okay, this is NOT what I expected.
Yeah, happens to everyone.
We just moved. Moscow Connect helped with everything.
Visa, paperwork, life is sorted.
Wait, it's actually that simple?
Maybe it's not about escaping.
Maybe it's about finding where you actually belong.
Hello, dear friends. Just want to remind you, if you like this video or you like what you hear, click like, subscribe if you haven't subscribed yet, send it to your friends. Let's grow this channel. Maybe we can finally hit it up to 100,000. That'd be a good round number for the summer. So let me know, leave some comments, and give a thumbs up. So look forward to seeing you in the next video. Cheers.
Yeah, I was hoping to get back to Russia for a spief, but it looks like that's not happening. Some early promises that, hey, we'd like to invite you and we'll foot the bill. I said, cool. And then crickets, nothing. So
I was thinking about going to that conference. You know how much a ticket for all 3 days costs?
10,000.
No, if only. 1.6 million rubles. So that's like $14,000.
Yeah.
Like, holy. Money. But if you only go for 1 day, the first day, it's only $1,000. So I guess the second and third day are the important ones because they suck up the rest.
Yeah, I thought, no, that's I ain't got that kind of money.
Okay, neither do I.
Not for that.
Yeah, they may be telling you lots of interesting things.
So
but
I'll be standing in the United States. I'll go to Russia Day celebrations at the Russian mission in the United Nations. So
cool.
That'll be fun.
Cool. Yeah, we definitely got to get you over in, during the summer. Nothing else, just to hang out, have a couple of beers, show you some of the sights outside of Moscow. Everybody goes St. Petersburg, Moscow. There's so much more to see, and a good chunk of it's only like within like, you know, 150 miles, 200 miles of Moscow.
Yeah,
and St. Petersburg.
I got fortunate during the trip. Gosh, well, I guess when, man, this is now 2 years ago, March, we got to go down to a shooting range that is about 100 miles south, the west of Moscow.
Mm-hmm.
And it got to go shooting that day, so that was fun.
Cool. Yeah, there's a lot of historical cities all around. Within about, about 200 to 300 miles of Moscow. There's a lot of historical sites. Stuff that's a lot older in Moscow, too. I mean, Murom's from around the 8th century A.D., so, you know, about 400 years older in Moscow. That's a lot. But Murom, interestingly enough, there's nothing to see there. There's like one really nice, huge, old monastery. But that's, you know, that's after Russia was Christianized. And before that, there's no historical sites. It's like, wow, the city's 1,400. It's a small city. Well, it's a large town. It used to be a big city. It's 1,400 years old. And there's like, damn, there's nothing to see here. Small provincial town, so yeah, you never know. So before we got on, we were talking about a guy Larry was briefing at a dinner, who's going to be taking over ground ops in the Middle East. He's going to be inheriting that, as we used to say in the Army, shit sandwich. Yeah. I told Larry, I don't know if I'd do that if I was, you know, in such a position.
Well, and the good news was this person, he understood the challenges because we got Yeah, I got talking about comparing 2003, when the United States could assemble, 165,000 man military force in Kuwait and Saudi Arabia without fear of being attacked with Scud missiles. I mean, there was that potential threat, but it never really materialized. But now, this general, to his credit, recognized, with drones and short-range ballistic missiles, we got a problem. Because you just, and apart from the fact, limited number of personnel. So when you're dealing with 50,000 guys, and then the issue gets into, okay, let's say that Trump gets it up in his brain pan that he wants to insert those guys on Kemsh Island or Karg. Okay, how do you do that? Are you going to do it by boat? But you don't have enough boats up there in the area, and how do you get them up there without them getting blown up in the process?
Yep.
Or do you put them on a plane and land them, or do they come out of a parachute? So it's either you get an aviation insertion via helicopter or fixed wing, or you jump in via parachute. Okay. Just the numbers, I'm figuring at a minimum you want 1,500 guys on the ground. Particularly in Kemsh Island, you're dealing with 150,000 inhabitants there.
Yeah.
Not good odds, if even 10,000 of them have firearms, all of a sudden, I don't care how good your 1,500 are, they're going to get overwhelmed with firepower.
Yep.
So then once you drop them on the island, how do you resupply them? Because right now it's hot as hell.
45 degrees.
Hell's probably cooler. So... where do you get the water? And even if you, let's say you dump some pallets of water, well, that water sitting out in the hot sun, and you know what it's like. Water gets, who wants to drink hot water? You maybe put a tea bag in it, get some tea. But, just the logistics side of it becomes a nightmare. And so that's what these folks haven't thought through. Oh, well, at least the good news was the commanding general's thinking it through and going, this is, as you say, a shit sandwich served hot, and not at all tasty, not at all appetizing.
Oh, it's going to be hot. And by the way, the humidity rate is about 100%. I mean, the desert's not that far away, but you're right on the Gulf.
Yeah, well, and island. Man, he made that exact point as well. He said it's not just the heat right there, it is the humidity off the ocean.
So the heat index is going to be, insane at that point.
So then whatever troops you've inserted... And again, we're not even dealing with how do you get them resupplied.
How do you get the wounded out?
Yeah. So it's just, the average person who's never had to carry a ruck with, you don't want to carry a full ammo can because, that only weighs about 40 pounds.
Well, nothing major. Especially if you have females in the infantry now. That way... They weigh about 100 pounds wet. There you go. Have a 40-pound kilo, 40-pound ammo can with all the other gear.
Yeah. I mean, it's just people don't understand the weight. You've got to carry what's on your back or, at least now. So old guy days, 40 years ago when we did the paramilitary class course at Camp Perry, they had us carrying what are called Prick 77s.
I know the Prick 77 very intimately.
So that's a heavy-ass radio, and then when you add the batteries in. And I got to be the RTO that day, so that was I don't know who I pissed off, but, walking around carrying that extra 40, 45 pounds of radio gear, and then you're trudging up mountains, and, so... If they've never done it, they don't have any idea what they're asking guys to do physically.
Oh, yeah.
And so no matter how good they look on paper, when you put them into a tough operational environment like that, it gets bad quick.
So wait a minute. Trump's finished military school. What are you saying? He doesn't know what he's talking about.
Yeah, well, I'm sure at that military school, they didn't put him out in the boonies with a 90-pound ruck. And that he had to march and practice escape and evasion tactics, etc. It's just particularly when you're up against helicopters too. Just the ability to do ground surveillance on even if you're in thick woods.
Oh yeah.
So the And that was this was the day before, you know, FLIR was widely available. Now,
yep,
spot your ass on a thermo camera.
Oh yeah, and then well, you have drones with thermo cameras flying
around. Yes,
You notice how close Karg Island is to the mainland?
Yes, so that's an artillery range.
Oh, worse than that. Oh, it's easy artillery range. It's worse than that. 36 kilometers from center to modern drones with a large battery pack. They'll fly out FPV drones with a large battery pack. They'll fly out up to 50 kilometers.
Yeah. Yeah, so it is. So I don't think, actually, you know, look, this all hinges on what Saudi Arabia decides to do this week.
Hmm.
So you 2 weeks ago, oh yeah, because 2 weeks ago the Saudis said, no, you're not doing air ops out of our territory, out of our bases, and over our territory, and that's why Trump had to call off Operation Project Freedom.
Oh, it wasn't because of negotiations and the Saudis asked him to negotiate further, as he stated?
Yeah, no, that's that's male bovine excrement, as Ray McGovern calls it. No, this is a matter of you got the KC-135s, which are based at Prince Saud Air Base. The F-35s, my understanding, they're not based in Saudi Arabia. They're based in Jordan and Israel. Far enough away that they're going to be less likely to get hit. The problem is that distance from, say, Mawafiq al-Sati Air Base in Jordan to Riyadh is like 819 miles, 825 miles. Combat radius of one of those F-35s is like 500 miles, 550, depending upon the payload. So, you know, just do the math.
Yeah.
Before they can even within 200 miles of Riyadh, they got to be refueled.
Yep.
So where are those tankers coming from? And so are you flying with a full squadron of 20 planes?
Okay, that's so a lot of fuel. 20
planes they've got to line up and get refilled with, you know, how many tankers do you need to refill 20 planes in an hour period?
And you got to do it twice going there, yeah, and coming back.
Twice. You got to do it three times. Cuz if you figure you go out 500 miles, refuel. You can go another 500 miles. We go actually another 300 miles. You fire your Tomahawks, your JASMs, turn around to get refueled.
Yep, you're right.
Fly another 500 miles. You got to be refueled before you can get back to your base. So at least three refuelings, at least.
Maybe you're looking at best one salvo a day.
Yeah. So here's what. So what happens if the Saudis say to the United States, no, you're not going to use our territory for refueling aircraft that are going to attack Iran. Not going to happen. And I am told that discussion is actively underway with China, Russia, and Pakistan in the lead on presenting it. And the PACs have some credibility on this because they've got a joint security agreement in place with the Saudis, and they just deployed, I think, 80,000 troops. Was it 80,000 or 8,000? I think maybe it's 8,000. Troops to Saudi Arabia to help the Saudis manage some of the population flows they're having from Bahrain.
Yeah, we can imagine that.
So that's why I say Saudis actually had the veto over this operation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they used it on Project Freedom. So we'll see. If they use it again, then that tells us that the Russian-Chinese proposal for a new security architecture is now underway, that these guys are serious about building it, and that's going to be like a tripartite agreement between Turkey, Saudis, and Iran.
Well, let me ask you this. The Saudis, they can close off their airspace. Would they close off their airspace or just deny the air bases?
And if they deny the air bases, then, you know, we can fly over for a bit, but they're going to run out of fuel.
Well, they're saying that, Prince Sultan, air base. I think 52 F-16s that are now stationed there. That was coming out.
They're there may have been before. I don't know what the status is right now.
That's easy range.
Yeah, they got the F-16s there. They're in range to get up to the frontier of Iran and drop in.
But they're also in range of all the munitions Iran has.
Exactly. And that's the danger where I think U.S. planners realize they got to, you know, they got to keep their key assets farther out of theater.
Now, you know,
they're hoping that the KC-135s don't get hit, but they're going to get hit too.
Of course they're going to get hit. But what about using, well, you know, Trump was pressuring UAE to go grab some islands. Now, UAE's a military force of 65,000 men, which doesn't mean 65,000 combat soldiers. As far as I recall, most of them, I think, are mercenaries.
Now, just tell me, how are they going to get there to the island?
200 kilometers? Hey, they could swim.
Yeah. Oh. I remember there was a terrorist attack, an attempted terrorist attack. It was launched by Hezbollah in Israel. And this is like 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the guys, they were going to try to do a maritime assault. Well, they launched themselves like 30 kilometers from shore to swim in. By the time they got to shore, they were captured by some 80-year-old fisherman. They were so tired. And I checked. You know, I was working at the time with he was just transitioning out of the SEALs. You know, he was a Navy SEAL commander. And I asked him, how far could you swim and be a combat effective? And he's like, maybe, you know, 5 miles.
Maybe. And they swam 30 miles?
30, yeah.
That's dedication. That's serious dedication with combat gear.
Swims. So that's why I say these guys, you got these troops in UAE. And again, you're back to, you've only got a limited number of ways you can deliver them. If you can deliver them via plane and parachute, so that means they're 130s. Well, so how many are we talking about? You know,
there's some slow flying airplanes, the 130s. I know them pretty intimately too.
Yeah, and you can only put 90 combat loaded troops on a plane.
Yep.
So if, like I said, if you're doing 900 soldiers, that means you got 10 of those aircraft. Well, how many C-130s do we have in the entire U.S. inventory? I checked. The number I got was 34.
Is it 34? God, yeah. I thought it was more than that.
No.
Well, I mean, two of them are left burning in the middle of the desert in Iran after that little, let's save the pilot while we're snatching the uranium heist.
Yeah. Yeah, so, again, the United States doesn't have unlimited airframes.
Oh, yeah.
So, and again, with helicopters, you got to have even more helicopters to haul fewer people. So there is no easy logistics way to insert the troops. And then, as you pointed out, once they're inserted, how do you keep them resupplied?
Yep.
Do you recall, did you have a standard load number of full magazines you were supposed to carry if you were in a combat zone? Was it like six?
Let me think for a second. No, it wasn't. We carried up to, I mean, six, yeah, you can carry six, but we could carry up to 240 rounds. So one magazine in, and
so
then
that's
30 rounds per magazine. Yeah, eight magazines. But, I mean, that's not, you add grenades and everything else to it, you're packing a lot of weight.
Yeah, well, that's heavy.
That's heavy.
And plus, how fast do you go through eight magazines? You can be through those in about 4 minutes.
Depends how controlled your fire is. And if you get really nervous, especially somebody that's never been fired at, they can go through that in about a minute. Just full auto. And they're not going to have much effect on it. But
right, just makes a lot of noise. Yeah, no, that's the thing. You know, but my point in that is even if you carry 240 rounds, you can go, if you're in a firefight, you can go through that real quick, and then what? Then that's where the resupply comes in. And, you know, I don't think people appreciate how heavy, you know, a full box of ammo is.
Oh, yeah.
And it's you know, if you're easy at, you know, doing arm curls with 40 pounds, then okay, fine. You're not going to have a problem. But most people aren't.
I do that 40 pounds arm curls.
One of the fitness tests for, I think, I don't know if it's just Army or Army and Marines, but you take that 40-pound box and you got to lift it. How many times can you lift it?
That's Marines.
Yeah.
Unless the army, sir, the army has gotten much softer than when I was in. It's not quite the daycare, summer daycare center that the Navy and the Air Force have become, but it's gotten much softer. I mean, yeah. I've watched these videos on basic training. And it's like, you know, when privates going through go, you know, we really liked our drill instructor. He's such a swell guy. What? Yeah, I mean, yeah. At the end, you respect him, but you hate his guts. He's ripping you to pieces and building you. It's not a, hey, let's have, there's one that they were throwing him a birthday party.
Oh, my God.
So they're like, frick, man, this is summer camp. I mean, this is a summer camp for teenagers, right? But the privates are throwing the drill instructor, and somehow they got a cake from somewhere, too. It's like,
no, I had a buddy. He retired out of the Marine Corps, but he was a gunnery sergeant, and he did a tour as a drill instructor, and so when it came to the day to teach the new enlistees how to shave, he looked for the kid with the worst acne in the class, and brought him up front and lathered him up and started shaving. Well, with those acne, the pimples got cut off and he started bleeding. I mean,
he did.
It wasn't life threatening bleed.
Right.
But it was a visual horrific bleed. And he said the reason he did that is after he did that, everybody else made sure they shaved proper because they didn't want the sergeant to be touching them.
Anybody pass out?
Yeah, probably.
When I was going through when I was enlisting, going through the medical, what the hell is it called now? Well, the med inspection. So we're going in to give blood, right?
Right.
And we're sitting there, and this guy, I mean, linebacker, right? I mean, but huge guy. He was my age. He walks in there, gives blood. Walks out, takes three steps, and he's out cold, right? We're sitting like, holy crap. I went into his booth. I was the next one up. Man, I didn't feel the needle going in my arm. That nurse, magic hands. This guy's just afraid of needles. He made it out, and he was out cold on the ground. Damn. This just giant guy just out. That's it. Bring the smell of salts.
No, that'll do you in.
Yeah, that's and the UAE, like I said, as far as I remember, at least the officer corps is almost all mercenaries.
Oh yeah, no, look, they keep talking about, oh, we're going to get this army of UAE or that army of the Saudi. Please, you're dealing with at best mercenaries and not great mercenaries.
Yeah,
they're well paid. But they're not highly motivated to see if they can put themselves in harm's way to get killed. They're not stupid.
Remind me again, who won the Saudi invasion plus their mercenaries from Colombia and everywhere else, Angola and so on, the Saudi invasion of Yemen?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, they failed to defeat the Houthis.
Yep.
So, these are sort of important benchmarks to look at. How do you square off? It's like, think of it like a basketball tournament. If you had trouble beating the high school team, then your chances of going up against one of the Division I teams and holding your own is real slim.
Yep.
And that's where, that's where the Saudis are militarily. They can't handle the high school teams.
No. If the U.S. military, I mean, I know the guys will go do it. It'll be a suicide mission. They'll go do it. And we faced a couple of suicide missions like this, too, that thankfully got called off at the last minute. But partially, one of them because Clinton got involved. President Clinton actually got involved and talked everything down. But so if they get told to go take an island, they're going to go take an island. But it's a suicide mission. And as their commanding general, if you know it's a pointless suicide mission, shouldn't he be resigning his command in protest?
Yeah, he said, no, I'm not going to send my troops into that. That's exactly right. But, you know, the guys that are more concerned about, hey, am I going to get promotion and get my points? Then, you know, they don't do the right thing. So, you know, that's always one of those indicators of leadership that you look for. What kind of leaders are they?
And you know, one of the things that you were saying before we started, which was interesting, was that the guy had no concept of what Iran was or its history. And we've seen DeSantis the same thing, by the way. Not DeSantis. What's his name from Texas? Republican from Texas.
What are we talking? Senator? Or congressman?
Senator. Yeah, the greatest defender of Israel in the Senate.
Cruz.
Yeah, Cruz. When Tucker Carlson had an interview with Cruz, and he's like, yeah, he doesn't know anything. He doesn't know the population. I don't know if he can even find Iran on a map, but he wants to go fight him. Well, yeah. he wants you to go fight him. He's not going to go fight him himself, obviously.
Yeah, no, it's, you know, knowing what you're up against and what they're willing to do. I mean, right now we're seeing warning signs out of Russia with respect to Europe, that the Europeans better damn well be paying attention, because, you know, when I saw, and I'm sure you did, Dmitry Polyansky's, his comments with Danny Davis the other day.
Yep.
And then basically Sergei Rybkov, the deputy foreign minister, said something very, very similar. So, yeah, and knowing Dmitry or Ambassador Polyansky, I mean, we're not great friends, but we developed... you know, he greeted me and guided me at the UN when I went there to speak 2 years ago, and we've
excellent.
Communicated since then, and been on a couple of different podcasts together. But you know, I know him well enough to know that he's not a guy that just shoots his mouth off because I got an opinion. I'm going to tell you what I think. Oh no! He's a professional diplomat. He knows what he can say and what he can't say, and he's always careful to caveat it if, you know, it gets even to the nuance of the use of military force. But, you know, basically the message he delivered and then Sergei Rybkov delivered just yesterday, I believe, was simple and stark, and it was continued attacks facilitated by Europe is going to result in retaliation against Europe, and they better be prepared for it.
You know, I was on Danny Davis' show yesterday. I don't think it's come out yet, and I was on first time I was on Redacted today. We were talking about the same thing. I've been saying this for a long time. Look, if the Europeans succeed in overwhelming Russian anti-aircraft systems, obviously, they've done this before, they're going to go after what? They're going to go after the early warning radar systems. Mm-hmm. They're going to have to go after the strategic nuclear bomber fleet. What is a nuclear superpower that's now blind going to do, especially when the other guy has a first strike position? Are they going to wait to get hit?
Well, you know, that was, you know, looking back at how well Iran planned its counteroffensive,
mm-hmm.
that the existing security architecture in the Persian Gulf was predicated upon the United States' promise, hey, we will protect you. We've got Patriot missile batteries in place. We've got THAADs. We've got some other systems. So, and we got all these radars. We're going to know when the attacks are coming. We got you covered. And so all the Gulf Arabs go, okay, cool. Yeah, we'll back you. Even though Saudi Arabia initially claimed to be publicly opposed to it,
mm-hmm.
the reality was when the attacks came, they were fully enabling those attacks against Iran.
Yep.
And then what happens? The Iranians turn around and begin blowing up all the radars and blowing them up with drones, of all things. You know, I thought your air defense systems were going to take those out.
There wasn't even a single Stinger that went up.
Yeah.
I mean, for God's sakes, a Stinger?
So here's the United States who, you know, we're like that mafia guy that came to the pizza parlor promising, hey, you know, you pay your monthly insurance fee and you won't be attacked. So all these Gulf Arabs, man, have been paying their monthly service fee and they got attacked and got the hell beat out of them.
Yeah, they did.
And so now they're going, do I really want to stay in a relationship with these people? Because... pretty deadly. It's not good for our longevity.
Nope.
So that's where I see something going on in that realm right now, where the Gulf Arabs are going to reevaluate their relationship with the West, and that's what China and Russia are offering as an alternative. Here's the alternative: a new security architecture, and the only one that could potentially attack you is the United States, and we'll make sure they don't attack you.
Yeah.
Everybody go, hey, what's not to like about this deal?
Well, you know, plus whatever airspace used to exist between the U.S. and Israel, even if it was just for show, it's gone now. I mean, especially with Fifth Fleet Forward is now going to be stationed in Israel.
I thought it was stationed back down in Florida.
Well, no, this is Forward Command.
Okay.
So it was stationed in Qatar, I believe. That base.
No, Bahrain.
Gone.
It was
Bahrain. Yeah. But that base is also gone. You know,
no, it's history. And then they ain't going back there. Now, their only other option might be something down in the Gulf of Oman, in either Oman or UAE. But again, that puts them in a vulnerable position where they can be easily attacked.
Oh, yeah. That's even worse than being Bahrain. You know, for the missiles have that much less distance to cover before they get hit. And no radar systems.
The only advantage is at least you're not bottled up in the Persian Gulf.
True, so very true. But
potentially sell away, but still.
Oman seems to be more or less at least semi-allied with Iran.
Yeah.
So I doubt that allowed the U.S. to sit there on their territory.
Yeah, no, I don't see Oman is signing on to this new security architecture proposed by Russia and China. And Pakistan's in the lead on that.
Well, the simple question from my side, including to the UAE, I mean, I understand Mohammed bin Zayed, who was on that torture video emails, and who grew up playing, video games, Call of Duty. I guess he thinks it may be just like that in real life. I mean, I understand these guys aren't exactly the brightest light bulbs, but if they sign up on the American mission that Trump is voicing, and Trump attacks the electric and the water purification systems, desalination plants, Iran's going to retaliate in kind.
Yeah.
Well, their countries are dead then.
Yeah. Particularly right now. The heat is on.
Oh, yeah.
With the to quote the popular song from Beverly Hills Cop. But I don't. Did you ever do any time in the sand pits and in the Gulf?
No. Okay, I was supposed to. Actually, I was supposed to go to Afghanistan, and at the last minute, they switched up our group for another group of instructors, and moved us to the rear. And then by that time, the time that was coming up, I'd already left. We were getting ready, we're packing, and all of a sudden, we've changed groups. And by the way, thank God, because I watched a documentary that was done, the group that went in our place, and I would have probably killed these guys with my own hands. Yeah. The entire infantry Afghanis were just druggies. The officer was just, they're standing there like, we should have gone on patrol an hour ago. Where's your officer? Oh, he's over there. He quit. Through a translator. And the officer spoke English, and they go up there, and it's a major. It's like, sir, what do you mean you quit? Oh, my men do not expect me. I do not want to fight this anymore. I don't play this game anymore. I'm quit. And these are the people they're dealing with. This is Petraeus' super army that he set up in Afghanistan. I was like, oh, geez. It's insane.
Well, I was on the ground at Al Udeid just 20 years ago today.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. And I could not believe how hot it was. And you get the heat there with humidity because you're close enough to the ocean. So, we're talking 118 degrees Fahrenheit, well over 40 degrees Celsius. And then, it's brutal conditions. So if you have to be outside operating in combat conditions, you're not going to survive long in that kind of heat.
Oh, I've been in that kind of heat. I was a consultant working at the Tengiz gas fields in western Kazakhstan. And it gets up to 50, 55 degrees. It's like 45 is the norm. Well, Celsius. So, you're looking at about 110. hot, dry wind blowing in your face, but a winter's minus 30. I've been in that. I can't imagine running body armor in that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when you add that extra weight, which means, you know, you got to stay hydrated, and this gets us back to the logistics. Where's that water going to come from?
Yep.
And, you know, to have it, you know, keep it cool enough that you can actually drink it and, you know, be beneficial. And then the electrolyte, so it's a nightmare. That's why I say this, Trump's talking a good game, but they don't have a lot of good options.
Well, speaking of good games, how'd you like Trump's visit to China? Did you see the intro video where they land, they do this like Avenger march into China with little kids with the flags and the slow-mo? Did you see that one?
Oh, yeah. Well, no, I haven't seen that. What I have seen...
I'll toss it over to you.
...is the... apparently the number of kids they had out there waving flags,
mm-hmm.
The Chinese made sure that the number was 168.
Really?
Yes.
No crap.
Yeah.
Oh.
So they were sending a very subtle message to Trump, you know, one that was sure was not received.
Did Trump even know how many kids were out there?
In addition, Marco Rubio couldn't come into country because he was on the sanctions list.
But they changed his name. They changed him.
They changed his name to the character that was used means rash, rude, obnoxious.
Oh, really?
Yeah, according to Chaz Freeman. And Chaz is a great authority on that because
right.
Chaz was Nixon's translator back in 72. So he knows exactly. So the Chinese were very... They weren't looking to confront the United States directly, but they sent a number of very subtle messages that basically, you're a declining power, and we're not pleased with a lot of the things you're doing.
Damn.
Yeah.
That's, damn. Oh, man, that's a Chinese. Well, I also like the way that, you know, she just didn't show up on the tarmac. He showed up for Kim Jong-il. He shows up for Putin. Nothing for Trump.
Yeah, he showed up in 20. The last visit in 2024 was Putin was there. Now, I noticed today he didn't show up. He sent Wang Yi. However, you know, Wang Yi as well is a high profile.
Mm-hmm.
Trump didn't even get Wang Yi. He got some second level dude, deputy premier, that nobody outside of China knows.
Yeah, yeah. You know, there was another somebody pointed out when he took him to that secret garden, and he was pointing out trees that are 300 years old, as in those trees are older in your country. And, you know, the Chinese are good at things like that. They
Yeah. Yeah. No, and, you know, Trump thought maybe he was the first there. No. You're here as sloppy seconds, man.
How did you like that little test with the notebook?
With the what?
With the notebook. When she goes up, he leaves his notebook under Trump's arm.
Was checking it out?
Yeah. While on video camera.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that was a setup, too.
Yeah. Not agree with that.
Sure, no, written in there. Screw you.
My favorite meme comes out of Trump is getting off the plane wearing a white T-shirt. He looks like the former actor, now deceased, Chris Farley.
Yeah, you know,
sort of this big fat guy with red hair, and his belly's showing. And on one side is Elon Musk. The other side is Pete Hegseth. They're trying to drag him across the tarmac, and the T-shirt says, "I went to China, and all I got was this T-shirt."
Well, hey, they got some very expensive Chinese food.
But then the other voice over on this says, "God, what is that smell? We need a diaper change here."
Yeah, that was, you know, 2 hour. I mean, 2 hour meeting, nothing accomplished. Tour, sightseeing tour, some good food. How much did it cost the taxpayer?
Well, yeah. Well, look, the two things Trump needed. One, was the access to the rare earth minerals. They didn't get that. Two, Iran's commitment to help pressure, China's commitment to help pressure Iran to end the war. Didn't get that. And you could argue that he also wanted to get expanded trade with the United States. Didn't necessarily get that. And, you know, while this is going on, U.S. is still imposing sanctions and still has sanctions in place on China. And it's like, guys, you know, the Chinese aren't stupid. They're not going to say, okay, yeah, we'll give you whatever you want. You can continue to punish us. No. This has got to be a two-way street, one based upon respect. And so far, the United States isn't willing to show the respect.
Let us betray Iran so you can, try to kill us later more effectively.
Or say, yeah, we need your rare earth minerals, Xi, so we can restock our supply of Tomahawks and JASSM missiles that we intend to use against you. So could you help us out there?
You know what that reminds me of? The industrialist union in Germany 2 years ago was proposing to the German government that they remove sanctions on Russian steel. Because they don't have enough German steel, they can't produce it, it's too expensive, they don't have enough gas, to produce ammunition to give to the Ukrainians to kill Russians.
Yeah, and the Russians go, oh, that sounds like a great deal. Yeah, let's do that.
Exactly.
Hell?
But, yeah, I mean, that's on the same level. I mean, it's a little less effective. The shells don't fly as far, but...
There's... lots of disconnects in this whole policy. And again, if you're, you know, do you want to have international cooperation or do you not? And if you want to have international cooperation, then you're going to have to calm everything down, sit down, and start talking to people and listening.
Yep.
Instead of trying to create these narratives that are going to go nowhere.
We're talking about narratives that go nowhere. The European Union that keeps talking about war with Russia, war with Russia, war with Russia. I mean, they beat that drum 24/7. They were having a conference on discussing their plans on Operation Deutschland, for the defense of Germany, or so they call it. And then they start talking about where are we gonna house the hundreds of thousands of Russian POWs. Which you don't there's take POWs on defensive, not too many.
There's an optimistic projection.
I don't remember who's saying it. But I've heard it from several sources. The evangelical churches in Germany self-organized to prepare for dealing with grieving parents who just lost their kids or wives who just lost their. I mean, they're on a societal level. Oh, it was Pascal. It was Pascal they were talking about group formation and psychosis, basic group psychosis. These people, they're quite serious.
I just learned an unfortunate statistic on Sunday. So, I was in part of, there's a shooting event. I've been supporting as the chief range safety officer. It's called Veterans and Cigars. So basically, it's for veterans that come out shooting competition. FN, Ruger, Colt sponsored. They provided the firearms that were used. And one of the RSOs assisting me, a guy named Tank. He was a Marine. He was a Navy corpsman. But worked with the Marines, so he did a lot of he was in a lot of combat engagements and dealt with a lot of combat casualties. One of my other and so Tank had been a student of mine. I mean, not that I had anything to teach him, but he had to get some NRA certifications. He had to take a class with me to get the certification because I'm in that position. And one of our other mutual friends, kid I met, Jamie Lee Sklatter. Jamie is 43, 44, and Jamie too was a Navy corpsman, but he also became a Marine Corps sniper. And it was funny when I was teaching him basic rifle. At no point did he say, "Hey, I'm an expert sniper. I don't need to, hear your bullshit. Let's just get this done and let's go." No, just the opposite. A lot of respect, listened, asked questions. And at the end, when he finally admitted what his background was, I was giving him a hard time. I said, dude, you should have been teaching this class. He goes, no, he says, actually, I said, I learned a couple of new things today.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I said, so there embodies that kind of attitude. Well, on Sunday, as Tank and I were leaving the event, Tank got a phone call. Jamie killed himself and committed suicide. He was out on a job in Kansas. And so I started looking at the numbers. The number of U.S. Army, Marine, and Navy personnel that have killed themselves since 2001 is 147,000.
Yeah, yeah.
That is a larger loss of life than all of the Marine, Army, and sailors that died in the Pacific Theater in World War II.
Yep.
That was 110,000 KIA. We now got 147,000.
Yep.
And part of the problem is this generation of the last 25 years, they're not their fathers and grandfathers, they'd go to a VFW post. Now, mm-hmm. The problem with the VFW post is there's a lot of alcohol involved. And so the last thing you need are guys that have got some issues self-medicating with alcohol. And
yeah.
So they don't have, but one of the advantages of the VFW is you're there with a bunch of other guys that have had your shared experience. And so you're not alone in dealing with these nightmares. But now this, you know, what I call this modern crew, they tend to be a little more independent. But I was just heartsick over this because Jamie is such a good guy, such a great attitude. And just a real, there's some people you meet and they just, the whole projection of what they give off, very positive vibe. And,
yeah.
Another one gone, another needless casualty.
You know,
and that's what we're talking about here. I hope the Russian government does a much better job than the U.S. government does of dealing with soldiers after their term of service. And we know that the Ukrainian soldiers are completely fucked.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, first of all, and you're right, it's between 20-23 so veterans and active duty soldiers a day committing suicide. It's been like this for years. Trump had mentioned it once when he was president the first term. But I never heard any American politician mention that. Yeah. I'm lucky enough, out of my close circle of friends, nobody's done it. Thank God, but that is a big factor. And 100,000 veterans in the U.S. are homeless.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. That's between the homelessness and the suicide is like a quarter of a million people. I mean, those are huge numbers.
Russia had this kind of, well, not quite this kind of problem on this scale, but Russia had a problem with this in Afghanistan, the Afghan veterans, because the Soviet Union fell apart, and the first Chechen War, because the Soviet Union falling apart, and Russia was falling apart. But the second Chechen War and everything else, I haven't seen these kinds of issues. And these guys, and the government's going out of their way to make sure when the veterans are coming back from SVO, they've got jobs waiting for them, they've got potential education if they want it,
right.
That... Yeah, and they really go strong after criminals, including women criminals, because there's a whole small grassroots industry of, hey, marry a guy that's going off the front, and then hopefully he'll get killed, and then you inherit everything, or if he does survive, while he's out there, rewrite the ownership on everything, and then divorce him. And they've gone actively after people like that. I mean, the government has shown very little mercy on people like that, which is the right thing to do. This is the federal level, not the state level. State levels, you just never know. A lot of state levels, unfortunately, are corrupted or afraid of the local mob. But the federals come in there, they don't give a damn. Yeah. I know we're both almost out of time, but real quick. Do you think Trump is going to try to take Cuba as a consolidation prize?
Yeah, and it'll blow up in his face. because the Cubans launch well, they haven't thought this through. You know, it's just the old concept. You break it, you buy it. We go in there, all we own it, and all of a sudden now we got to figure out, okay, we got to provide water, light, all the power to social services, et cetera. And hell, we've shown that we can't really do that. We're not good at it. So this is another potential nightmare that Trump will get to declare victory and then turn away from it while it turns into a complete conflagration or dumpster fire.
What about partisan warfare? Because I'm pretty sure it's going to be quite a few people who are not going to be too thrilled with the U.S. sitting in Cuba.
Let's watch what, what I'm watching today is what happens with the Thomas Massie primary in Kentucky. That if, millions, tens of millions of dollars have been flooded in there by the Zionists trying to control the outcome. They're using a guy named Ed Galron as their tool. I knew Ed. Ed's a former Navy SEAL. I've known Ed for 30 years. He's not a good choice, but he's allowing himself to be used as a tool. So, but if Massey prevails, then that's going to be, that'll be, I think, the start of a turning point, perhaps in America, where the Trump realizes he can't continue to sell out to Israel.
I mean, Trump's turned on all his closest people: Marjorie Taylor Greene, Massey, Ron Paul. I mean, Tucker Carlson, all the people that, all the people that went out there. Charlie was, as we've discussed, they're both looking at it as more of an execution. This is, you think they may be holding something like that over Trump's head? Do as we say, we'll whack you too?
I think potentially, yes. I think that's definitely a possibility.
So a small government in another corner of the world, no names mentioned, is holding American presidents hostage. Holy crap.
Yeah.
And that's, and you can do it like that? Wow. Seriously? Wow.
Gotcha. Yep.
Well, Larry, thank you. Thank you for coming out and joining. And it's always a pleasure.
All right, brother. Yep. We always have good conversations.
We
it's
do.
It's always nice and relaxed, and I think people enjoy it.
Yeah. I get very positive feedback. You see the feedbacks. I send you the links. And like I said, we got to get you out here sometime soon.
Happy to do so.
It's 30 plus degrees this whole week.
Yeah, there you go. That's finally summer. Yay.
Oh, yeah. Next week it's going to be raining and it's going to be in the 20s. But, yeah, it's 30-some degrees right now. So I was like, boom. It's good for Moscow.
Got it.
All right,
brother. We'll see you later.
Yep. Cheers.
Bye-bye. Bye.